Thanks for downloading this podcast, which is for personal use only. All contents are copyright Radio Show Limited and must not be reproduced, rebroadcast, or used in any form without permission. For contact details, go to www.radiolemon.com. Nissan, the power behind the FIA World Endurance Championship on radiolemon.com. Nissan, we know sports cars.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome along to our Powered by Nissan live and exclusive coverage of the Mount Fuji 6 hours here in Japan. It's John Hindhoff, and from Race Car Engineering, at Race Car Engineer himself, Sam Collins. Hello, konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa, John.
I better turn you on.
Yeah, that would help.
My first time here. What a fantastic facility, which is populated today by literally hundreds of Japanese school children.
I'd say thousands. They're all about the size of my knee, and they've all got these identical black Audi caps, and they're running around being very enthusiastic, saying hello to everybody. I think it's great to see.
Only if you say hello to them first, which I think is lovely.
I got a whole class to say konnichiwa to me.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, a whole class, 30 small Japanese children.
Is that already the highlight of your trip?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Coming up then, we've got the first free practice session starting in about 50 seconds time. It's overcast here, but generally speaking, decent weather. I'll give you the Michelin weather update and the track temperatures in just a moment or two's time when I find the right screen, because I'm not very well organised here. We've just had all of the screens replaced this morning so we can actually read the timekeeping, which we've had some issues with in the past. Apparently it was down to a digital feed on a analogue television. It is 18.9 degrees on the Michelin track temperature, 15.1 degrees Celsius in the air. Around about 69% humidity, and the wind coming straight down from the north. The typhoon has blown itself out, although there's another weather system coming along. And for those of you perhaps in bed at the moment listening in, I know Declan Brennan is doing that on the right-hand coast of America, watching the fifth inning in the deciding game of the baseball, Boston and Detroit. Boston up. Spoiler alert, Boston up 4-0 at Detroit in the deciding game. Hello to Alfred Wallace from a dark and wet South Wales as the cars roll out onto the circuit for FIA Free Practice 1. We are unlikely, I would have thought, to have anything from TV today. I do have an effects channel, which I'm not hearing anything up, so that would tend to suggest that they aren't going to be giving us good pictures. We've got some track CCTV pictures, and of course we've got timing and scoring, so we should be able to at least give you some idea. For more details, of course, go to fiawc.com, and we will have sound and vision together tomorrow, streaming video and for the whole of the race on Sunday here, of course. Now, we have got a couple of connectivity issues. The responsible adult is struggling just a little bit with connectivity. Not her fault. So she's not going to be tweeting, but we will be. I've got TweetDeck open, so we will be watching what's going on at Specutainment for that. Cars are out on the circuit. You can probably just hear them in the background. And hello to Kyle Hall, listening in Daytona Beach, Florida. That's kind of cool. Home of the 24 hours. And first car that goes through is an Audi with Marcel Fesler at the wheel. And from the pit lane, he's just done a 151.0. Now, we're going to keep our eyes on what's going on the track. But as we've got Sam here, and Sam will be our Powered by Nissan pit lane crew this weekend. As we've got Sam here in this session, I thought we might do a bit of geeky tech talk.
We could do. I've never been a whole crew before.
Yeah, you are a whole crew. Yeah, you are the crew, man. You're my crew. So you've been here since the Grand Prix, haven't you?
I have indeed. I came for the free practice sessions for the Formula One, and I've stayed here ever since and had a look around Japan as normal. Mm. Unfortunately, my plans were a little bit disrupted by a slightly windy day, which means I didn't get to go to the Nissan Z-Od launch. But we're going to see that car later today on track, I believe.
You are indeed, although it won't be doing the planned full lap. It will be doing some running. They've still to install the internal combustion engine on that car, and that won't happen for some time. Parallel development, something I've never heard of before, Sam, a car being developed without its primary motive power unit.
You can do it if it has such a strong electric system as the ZL does. There's not many cars around that you could do it with. The Toyota Prius, for example, is a fully integrated powertrain.
Mm.
So it suggests that the Zeod under the skin isn't fully integrated. So they
And indeed, Darren Cox said exactly that, that it will run with one or the other or both. Not both together, interestingly. They've made a commitment to the ACO that they will not use both power sources together. It will be one or the other. So in terms of adding together, no, that's not going to happen. It will be either full electric or full internal combustion engine.
And the reason they have to do that, because if they did use both together, the car would be super quick, 600 brake horsepower equivalent, roughly.
And probably a bit more than that,
Yeah, possibly a bit more, and absolutely no drag whatsoever. So the thing would be a missile down the straights.
I don't know if you've heard, we just played actually the replay, and we'll play it again over the weekend, the Zayard launch that we did yesterday. Ben Bulby in an exclusive 15 minutes that he spent with us before the car launch, saying that the floor, in terms of lift over drag, is like 100 to 1. It's basically free downforce. They've designed it so now that's one element. The whole car isn't that, but those numbers are bonkers, aren't they?
The whole car is the numbers are bonkers. I mean, it has all of the benefits of the delta wing concept, which we saw last year, and we still see in the American Le Mans series now with a bubble roof on it. It means there's hardly any drag on the car, it doesn't need very much power, and the downforce it does generate all comes through the floor, so you've got no nasty, ugly aerofoil sticking up in the background. And actually, I think it's a really interesting way for people to go. And in future, it's something you've suggested before, John, that if you have a lightweight class, it puts the emphasis on the manufacturers to be really efficient. And I think that's exactly what this sort of endurance racing is about, isn't it?
Yeah, and the car looks just gorgeous. I mean, everybody knows my cynicism, professional cynicism, about the original Nissan Delta Wing. I still wonder what technologically was so special about it to give it Garage 56. I don't wonder that about Zayed, because I look at Zayed and see something that is incredibly different and takes that whole concept on, well, immeasurably. It also, and I said this to Ben yesterday, and I couldn't really find the right words, and I still can't, but it looks much more of a complete project. The roof on the car has been designed that way from scratch. It's an LMP1 tub built to the new regs with an LMP1 cockpit area built to the new regs. And the proportions that gives the car is completely different from Nissan Delta Wing, and certainly from Delta Wing Coupe that you see in the States. And the detail on it is just glorious.
It's the latest Ben Bulby project. Last year at Le Mans, I said to him, how are you going to top this then, Ben? And he went, well, I've got something planned, but I can't tell you what it is. Well, it was the Zayed.
Mm.
And this is the third iteration of the Delta Wing concept we've seen. The first was the car we saw 2 years ago at Le Mans. Then we had the coupe that was launched at Sebring and has made a few races in the American Le Mans series. This is the third iteration. There's a tantalising prospect at the WEC race next year in Austin where we might see all three of them on track together.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. That'd be very exciting to see which one is quickest.
The interesting thing about it is, of course, that there are no shared components between Zayed and Nissan Delta Wing or Delta Wing Coupe as it stands now. Under the skin, and I've been fortunate enough to see under the skin, little detail areas like the front suspension. I mean, those machined parts on there are a thing of beauty. The tiny, holding your hand, four-way adjustable shockers. The half kilo of steering rack. Half a kilo of steering. These things are automotive art.
It's the machining. You're absolutely right. When you look under the skin, and hopefully we'll be able to bring you some pictures under the skin later this weekend, but it is just an exquisite piece of engineering, and it's largely down to the guys at RML and the Nissan engineers at Cranfield in England. They've sort of teamed up and made a fantastic effort to create this beautiful, beautiful car. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of the electronic wizardry has come from the guys here in Japan, in Yokohama.
Oh, almost certainly. Already an issue for Nick Johnson in the 57 Crone Racing Ferrari. Had a little spin down at turn 5. Just, we can't quite see that part of the track from here. We can see the last couple of turns of the infield section and then a bit of the front straight. That car's continued. Hello to At Right Turn Lover. listening in from Indianapolis, adding to the list of places having a motorsport connection, and also to Sarah Rigby, who's in a dark Cheshire this morning. Martin and Sarah up bright and early. Well, early, she says. Anyway, and Dominic Windor, listening in Brisbane, Australia. So we do have some listeners from literally every corner of the globe at the moment. Just to finish off on the whole Zayod thing, the very interesting thing that came at the end of that was from Darren saying that this is, he believes, the first motorsport project, certainly in a long time, if ever, that's been funded by an OEM, a manufacturer's R&D budget for street cars.
It's not quite true. It's not the first project. Certainly some of the early Corvettes were funded. And maybe even now the Corvette racing program is funded by the R&D department.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look at my notes. I'll come back to you on that one. So I do have some information on...
But it's unusual, isn't it?
It's highly unusual. For example, most of the racing programs are run from the marketing budget.
Yes.
The Toyotas here, interestingly, are not. The engine comes purely from Toyota's engineers here in Japan, and the chassis comes from TMG, which is a purely technical company. But I think there is some marketing into the actual running of the car, hence why we have two cars here in Fuji rather than the one we've seen for most of the season.
We'll talk a little bit more about Zayod across the weekend and some of the other things that that Darren Cox and Ben Bowlby were hinting about. I will pick up one thing. Excellent article that I think Peter Wright had an interview with Ben before the launch, and Ben was very forthcoming about things. The intel that I've got coming out of various places is that this will be an unconventional engine, and the IC engine, possibly, well, Ben said yesterday, possibly mounted transversely. Why would he mention transversely if it wasn't going to be mounted transversely at the back of that car? Somewhere in the region of 1.5 litres, supercharged three-cylinder?
It could be. If you're going to mount it transversely, it's got to be pretty short.
Yeah,
in the back of that car. It's not a wide rear end on that car. It's certainly not a wide front end, but it's certainly it's got a big bum.
Yeah.
It hasn't got a big bum, so you've got to fit a small engine in there, and to get that small, it probably would have to be a three.
And I think I'm right in saying that there's a Nissan street car that's got a supercharged three-cylinder, not for 1.5 litres, I think for about a litre or maybe 1.1.
There could be some of their K car things they have out here that
I think there's a Micra GT or something, or a Micra S that has that as well.
Could well be.
And so marketing-wise, again, there's a good reason to do that. Sam Collins is with me, John Hainoff in the booth, powered by Nissan. This is the first free practice of FIA WEC Fuji this weekend. Let's talk about what's going on the track. 29 cars entered, and we have had all of them out, at least for an installation lap. We're still waiting for a definitive entry list, one or two late changes in drivers, etc., but nothing desperately unusual in terms of who is here, except we've got a couple of new people to talk about, Sam, and obviously we've got the usual suspects. We've added the number 7 Toyota with Alex Wurz, Nicolas Lapierre and Kaz Nakajima to the hybrid ranks. Just the one Rebellion car, they're splitting their troops this weekend, one at Road Atlanta for the 1,000 miles there, and one here, and it is Andrea Beliki and Matthias Besch who are here. Nicola Prost signed up again for next year for Rebellion. That came out this week, and that's an interesting move, and I think a good move from Bart Hayden and the guys at Rebellion.
I think it's a good move from Nicola Prost as well. He's a very switched on driver. He's got, I believe, he has an engineering degree actually, and the Rebellion guys are going to have to be developing this new Oreca designed and built R1 car. They're all new car for 2014. What we don't know too much about is its powertrain. Now, it's almost certain to have the RV8K engine, which Toyota fits in absolutely everything.
Which is what they're using at the moment.
Which is what they've got at the moment. But will it have a hybrid powertrain as well?
No.
We don't know that.
No, I don't think it will.
I think they're going to leave the scope to put one in.
Really?
Yeah.
But not necessarily the same type of hybrid powertrain that's been used in the works cars.
I think it'd be completely different. It'd be far simpler than the works car
one.
The works cars are very interesting. They could be the most the works Toyotas next year could be the most powerful sports cars we've seen in a very long time.
Since Group C. We're talking 11 and 1200 horsepower.
We're talking in excess of 1200 horsepower in qualifying.
I'm very, very excited by that.
Yes, exactly. It's going to
be
fun.
And this is a normally aspirated petrol engine with a whopping great EV system on it, driving all four wheels at various times, not necessarily at the same time.
Two whopping great EV systems.
Well,
one at the front, one at the back.
Yeah. Now, will that be two separate systems? Because Audi aren't going to do that. Audi are going for a single, not a dual hybrid, a single system, but potentially still driving both axles.
You're allowed to have two recovery sources.
Yeah.
So two motor generator units, if you like.
Yeah.
And that's what Toyota have done. Toyota have been very pragmatic.
And Porsche.
And Porsche. I didn't know that, actually.
Oh, sorry, maybe I wasn't meant to say that. Oops.
Well, yeah, everybody knows that now. Toyota have been very pragmatic.
Listening, it's early.
They've gone for basically the same hybrid system they have on this current car running around at the moment.
Yeah.
But two of them.
Yeah.
So that's two times 300 brake horsepower.
But the interesting thing about that was, of course, this car, or at least the previous iteration of the TSO30, was running all-wheel drive with just the motor on the front when it was being developed, because they were assessing and gathering data to decide which one to run, weren't they?
That's
so
right.
They know some of the pitfalls and some of the advantages.
Well, essentially the Mark 1 TSO30, if you want to call it that.
TSO30/1.
Yes, that's the one. That was designed because they didn't know whether to go for four-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive, and which one would be a better solution, as we've got a couple of cars taking interesting routes through turn 5. One of the Aston Martins there exploring the glass, and I saw a prototype.
It's an Audi with damage,
yeah.
And an Audi throwing out a degree of... Oh, yes, there's fluid coming out the back of that Audi.
Heavy damage on that.
That's heavy damage on the back of the number two car, I think.
Oh, we've got a red flag because of that.
And it was car two and car... let's see which Aston it is. That comes in. See, I did need the binos. Oh, the whole of the right-hand side of that Audi is gone at the rear.
I don't know if they're going to be able to get... That's a huge shunt he's had.
That car might be out. That car could be out for certainly the whole day. Where is the Aston? Here is the Aston trundling into the pits now, I think.
Seemingly no damage on it.
If that was the Aston, it is the 96 car.
Do you know what I think's happened here, John? I think the Audi's had its own accident, perhaps on his own oil or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And taken a massive bite out of something, and I don't know if he's going to get it back. He's trying.
He's off the circuit at turn six. We can see it down the hill from us now.
Absolutely destroyed rear end. He's still
massive damage to the right rear and fluid spewing out of that car. I didn't realise we could just see turn 5, actually.
We can just see the runoff area. Yeah. And I just saw the
conflagration. You're listening to RadioLeMond.com, powered by Nissan. Sam Collins from Race Car Engineering. 97 Aston comes in with a little bit of dirt on the side. Maybe that car was the one that went off.
That would be the one, because he did run across the grass. But I don't think there's any damage on it. I think what's happened is the Aston must have been just behind the Audi and managed to get mixed up in somebody else's accident. It looks to me like the Audi has such a big hit on something, and I've no idea what there is down there to hit.
Well, there's nothing there to hit. You've got to go a long way off.
So we may have another car. There may be a third car in this accident that we haven't seen.
I'm 95 Aston has not come round.
And there's the 92 Porsche, the Leeds driven car at the moment. That's in the correct sector and is out on track.
Yeah, and so is Poulsen's car. So maybe it was Poulsen's car.
The 31 Lotus has just re-entered the pits.
Yeah, so Kevin Weider brings that black Lotus in. Here comes the Krohn Racing Ferrari, which had Nick Johnson on at the start. He had a spin down there. In fairness, coming down into 5, you come up over the top of the rise and you're on the brakes in a very...
No, I think we've got them all apart from the Audi. There are two GT cars coming down the pit lane quite slowly, I must say.
It's a long way from that final corner, even to the start of the pit lane. You're going to be hauling, aren't you?
This is before
you pull into the pit lane.
One of the longest straights in motorsport. It's up there with the gap between the two chicanes at Le Mans. It's 1.5 kilometres. It's just under what you're allowed to have as a maximum.
Right, now that's a damaged Aston coming in.
Yeah.
And that's got left front damage. It looks like it's got maybe a puncture or something. So that's the 95 car.
No, his left front's not turning at all, actually.
No.
It could be failed suspension. Oh, it's got no tyre.
Yeah, it's
no
gone.
So
that's
on.
The 95 car into the pit lane, followed in by the Porsche that we were missing. That's just followed round under red flag. We've already got the recovery vehicle off to pick up the Audi, which has not reappeared from behind the
raised area, which we can't see past. That's one of the car parks that the press are using at the moment. We are, if you know Fuji at all, we are on the finish line. Well, it depends which one they use, but we are right opposite pit entry, up in the high grandstands with several thousand Audi hatted school children being brought up into the stands in small groups, and they are doing that we're walking with a little sign in front, which is great. And now we've got some pictures on the CCTV which aren't very clear, and the recovery, well, there's a car being sent down there, and that's not going to be enough. The right rear of the number two Audi, which was being driven by Loic de Waal, and this is the car leading the championship, let's not forget, at the moment, for Alan McNish, Loic de Waal and Tom Christensen. That car is not under its own power. It's pulled off at the side of the circuit, literally just beyond where we can see, and there's a flatbed now with a crane on the back of it going round to it.
It doesn't look big enough, that flatbed.
It'll hang over the end a bit. It'll be fine.
Well, it hasn't got a rear end on this.
Well, indeed, yes. They've lost half the... There's debris on the track as well, and it was it's been confirmed now by the race control that it was cars 2 and 95. So it was Christian Poulsen and Loic de Waal as the... I'm sure that's a Fuso flatbed gets to the back of the Audi.
Well, de Waal, just before that happened, had set the fastest lap of the session so far with a 1:28.6.
Not hanging about.
No.
Some 20-odd seconds quicker than anybody else.
Yeah. Not quite 20 seconds more.
I was looking at the last lap. My apologies. I had so many different types of timing screen. I'm back to this one now. Okay. Yeah, 3/10 quicker than anybody else. Excuse me.
Ah, now they've brought on another flatbed, so perhaps they realise this one's a little bit too small.
Hasn't that got something on already? No.
No, just the rear end of it. Right. Well, I'm very curious to see how this has happened, because the Aston Martin didn't seem to be too heavily damaged, but the damage on the Audi looked...
As you said, the left front tyre was missing from the Aston Martin.
But there was no body damage evident. So it's absolutely the worst possible outcome. We've just, 20 minutes of the first practice session done here at Fuji. The championship leader's car is in pieces, literally.
Hello to Shea Adam, listening in Georgia for the Road Atlanta 1000 and that this weekend. And we have drama here in the first free practice session with her. We're just over an hour and 9 minutes still to go. We're under red flag as Loic de Waal has had a big accident, big damaging accident. He's clearly fine because he drove the car away.
Oh yeah, he was trying to get back to the pits.
There's a quarter of the car missing. The right rear quarter just wasn't there, Sam.
And if that monocoque is damaged, John, I don't know if Audi carry a spare monocoque to the races, but we're an awful long way away from Italy and Germany where they're manufactured.
It's a fair point. And pictures of the school children right in front of us up on the big screen at the moment, and what we need to see is, we're going to see the car coming right in front of us. Unfortunately, it'll be the wrong side.
I think there's enough damage that we'll be able to work it out.
Okay. It appeared the right rear wheel was either missing or pushed up to where the rear deck should have been.
It looked to me like the whole right rear corner had right gone up to the edge of the transmission had gone.
8 minutes before restart of this session, estimated from down in race control.
I wonder if the responsible adult saw what happens, because she sat just slightly...
No, unfortunately she was walking down the back of the back of the grandstand at the time. Now, Shea Adam asks a reasonable question at Specutainment. She said, if the damage is bad enough, could that car possibly be out for China? I think there's enough time to get a spare tub out for China,
yeah,
certainly.
I'm not sure what the situation with Chinese customs are, but I'm sure Audi will find a way around it.
Well, it's just send a different car, isn't it? Because they won't bother sending that one from here.
Correct, but how whether they were going to send a different car anyway, I think they were going to send all the cars direct. But the Chinese customs, because that's why we've got these shipping containers in the back of
ready them, to go straight to China from here.
But the difficulty with that is the Chinese customs are really quite difficult. And if you want to bring in a new monocoque and a bunch of spare parts, which would go in the container anyway, it could be a pretty tall order. But I'm sure Audi will make that happen. They sell an awful lot of cars in China.
They manufacture cars in China.
Indeed.
Specifically for the Chinese market. Long wheelbase A4s and long wheelbase A6s, which are built in China.
And they sell a huge amount of R8s.
Yes, they do. They do. So, Shea Adam at the Road Atlanta 1000 miles this weekend. and the last of the American Le Mans Series races, as we are under a red flag period at the moment for contact, heavy contact, at least for the Audi number 2, 95 Aston. Christian Poulsen also involved in the incident somehow, came back without a left front tyre, but with exceedingly small other damage, to the point where Sam Collins and I couldn't see it. And we are waiting for the Audi to be recovered from turn number, well, between 6 and 7 effectively, running down the back straight. It's a big circuit here, but it doesn't take up an awful lot of real estate. It's long and narrow, isn't it?
Well, it used to be a bit longer and a little bit more, well, not quite as narrow, but the straight used to go on even further, and we can't quite see it from our position here, but off in those woods to the left of the box here, John, there's a big old banked corner.
I know, I've got to go and see it.
It's not that impressive, actually. It's
oh, really?
No, it's just a big corner, but the track sort of dropped.
Is that part of the old banking in front of us as well?
No. This circuit was originally going to be built for NASCAR.
Yeah.
So the Fuji Speedway was designed to be a NASCAR course, and they only had enough money to build the start-finish straight and the first corner.
Mm-hmm.
They ran out of money to build the corner at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
So after a few people put some money in there, some arguments gone on, they decided to build a road course out of what the half that they'd built.
Because they did race on the bankings. Right up until the early 70s. I think Derek Bell raced out here. He said it was pretty scary going into turn one with a bank corner, which was slightly downhill. And, I mean, it was quick.
It wasn't just quick. I mean, it killed quite a few drivers. Mm. And that's really what put paid to it. Then they eventually decided, quite sensibly, that it was a bit silly to have that level of danger on this track. And in the end, ended up with a road course. The road course was heavily revised about, and don't shoot me if I'm wrong on this, about 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When, for Formula One. Formula One came here for 2 years, and the fans didn't really like it. So they wanted to go back to Suzuka. Formula One went back to Suzuka, and we got left with this fantastic facility not all that far from Tokyo.
I love it. I've driven it on various simulations, console games and things like that. It doesn't prepare you for coming here, not at all. And, you know, just seeing, we're talking about the incident that's just happened down at Turn 5. We've got probably about another 4 or 5 minutes before we restart this session, according to race control. You come up through turn 4, which is a very, very quick right hand, lots of runoff here. That is one thing that there is, you've got to, which is why it makes this whole thing with Audi very interesting. You've got to go a long way off before you hit anything, as the one of the RS6s is now heading round to where the Audi was parked up the last time we saw it. You come up over the brow from 4, you're still heavily on it, you're just going over the brow before you have to brake and turn left into what is quite a slow corner at turn 5. It opens out into 6 and 7, and it's really important. I can still see that there's a fluid on the circuit in front of us. We've got two flatbeds and an Audi estate car, an Audi wagon now, Avant, getting down to it. It looks like most of the Audi is on one of the, it's just being pushed across now onto one of the flatbeds. Meantime, down in the pit lane, the Rebellion, the 12 car, Matthias Besch brought that car in. It's being worked on by the guys from Rebellion. They're looking at the Toyota engine and
air pressure.
Well, I think that's a lucky down a holy thing.
No, it's air pressure.
You sure?
Yeah.
Is that what he's looking at?
No, it's not an endoscope. He's looking at the pressure on something, I think.
Underneath the airbox.
Oh no, you might be right there. So
I think
just
that's an endoscope.
Where it's.
Is that not?
I'm not sure.
They're looking underneath the airbox on the right hand.
I think they're
side.
Looking at the air pressure, in something, or the fluid pressure in something there.
Okay.
Not certain. It could be fuel pressure.
Hop Suisse, by the way. I have to say that it's the contractually obliged. Our TV pictures are coming from inside one of the boxes. That's the press room. One of the cameramen has decided not to go too far from the sushi. In fact, they must be just opposite us down there under those three Toyota signs, looking down.
I did have a couple of nice bits of sushi just before I came up.
Did you? Yes, thanks for bringing me some.
Oh, there was one box, and I
did you not just bring some?
I was going to, and then.
I'm very fond of sushi.
I shall bring you some later.
Well, the Audi is on the back of the original flatbed, the shorter of the two, that Sam Collins here to my right was slightly sceptical about whether it would fit onto. We've now been stopped for something in the region of 15 minutes.
Well, session's due to restart in 30 seconds. That's not going to happen.
No. That is not going to happen. At Specutainment, at Radio Le Mans, it looks like the responsible adult is returned to health. And hello to Jean-Yves Jou from Brussels, or nearer to Spa-Francorchamps. Brussels is not that near to Spa-Francorchamps, Jean-Yves, so come on, where are you? Are you in Brussels, or are you nearer to Spa-Francorchamps?
The first time I went to Spa, I stayed in Brussels, and yeah, it's a very long way to Spa.
And Danny Chen is taking you up here as well. Near to Tokyo, are you sure?
Yes, I'm staying in Tokyo.
It's quite a lot.
It's about an hour on the romance car. Which is the name of the railway train.
Right, Audi is... Oh, don't come back reverse direction. Right, the whole of the rear is gone.
That's generally bad practice for any
right
racer.
Rear has gone on that car, right to the middle of the car. The half of the deck has gone, not the whole rear deck, interesting. The good news about that is we will see it as it comes. I'm guessing that what they're going to do is shortcut back into the back of the paddock, Sam, which is why it's going the wrong way.
I'm just trying to work out where the lower paddock gate is.
I think there's one just in front of us, down here, look. We'll see in a moment when he emerges from those behind those trees. The guys in the Audi pit will be looking at that.
Well, that's going to be a long night for them, whatever happens. That is certainly not a small repair job.
Mm.
And certainly for a championship leader, that... Well, John, what would that mean for the second car, the number one car? Is that now in the hunt for the championship?
They need turmoil to befall the two car. They were in the position until the last race. The victory at the last race for the two car meant that even just finishing second to their colleagues with the one car getting the points for fastest lap wouldn't have been enough for the one car. The one car would have needed accident or incident to befall the two, or cars to get between them. Now here, of course, there are two other cars to potentially get between them. No disrespect to Rebellion.
Well, you say get between them. I mean, actually, Toyota is here not to finish second, I think.
Well, and that would be disastrous for the one car's championship aspirations. It is not, as I say, in the remit... I was wrong, you know. That's an...
That's you're absolutely spot on. It is a six. It's going to come up right in front of us, which is... Well, not quite right in front. No. I'm very confused as to the layout of the service roads here at Fuji. Well, it looks like we're just getting ready, because one of the Toyotas I saw rolling up to the start of the end of the pit lane, getting into the brilliantly named first corner.
And the second corner is called...
Second corner.
Uh-huh. The third corner is called... No, it's called corner, yeah, isn't it?
Exactly.
For those of you who have video games, you'll know this very, very well indeed. It's a downhill entry to first corner, a bit of a difficult spot to pick your braking point and your turn in. Second corner is just a little left kink, so once you unwind out of the first corner, easy to get the power on too much and drift wide and ruin your lap, as the pit lane has been opened, so the flatbed is off the track, and we've yet to see that return. Still running downhill at this point, down to quarter corner, which is not quite a 90-degree left-hander, probably third gear, and you've got to really nail the turn in there, and then this long turn four, the 100R, that just seems to go on forever, and begins to climb at the exit, and again, you're waiting patiently to get the power on, up over the top of the rise, and then turn five, 90-degree left-hander, off camber, on the turn in, and then the camera helps you towards the apex, but literally it comes at you so quickly, and you've got to get on the power early there, because the run down towards
330R,
which is is basically, that's a straight, you are flat out down towards the bottom of the hill where the Dunlop chicane, the Dunlop corner is, not using the chicane, I presume, here.
I think we might be, actually.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Alright, so using the chicane before you come uphill through the turn 13, which is called the 13th corner. Prius corner is a relatively new name. It's the, you come into that very quickly and cheat the apex before it tightens up to a 90 degree left, and then you come round to Panasonic corner, which has been called that for ages. The final corner, and again, that's a uphill corner, easy to get it wrong and get on the power too early and use way too much of the runoff on exit. I love this track. It's a technical track. It is a track that requires precision and patience, and there are places where, again, half a car offline and all of a sudden the track stops helping you and tries to throw you off.
It's one of those really difficult courses. You speak to anyone in Japanese motorsport and they always use Fuji Speedway as a reference, particularly this section called Prius Corner and Panasonic Corner.
Yeah.
These two corners. The reason it's called Prius Corner is actually after the GT300 Prius,
yes,
which absolutely monsters through there and is quicker than anything else going. Whereas Panasonic Corner, this tight corner leading onto this epically long straight, it's one of the most important corners leading onto a straight anywhere in motorsport.
And you can't believe the rise and fall here. Whatever you've seen on video games, on videos, on popular video viewing sites around the world, forget it, because they don't do it justice. We're looking down now towards the exit of turn 5 through 6 and towards 7 as the remaining Audi goes through into turn 7. It's comrade in arms held up. There are two flatbeds, and I think there's other bits of cars on both of those.
I think the second one may be empty.
Right, okay. But the Audi is being, the number two Audi of Loic de Valle is being held onto the flatbed by the crane, by the crane arm, which is still extended directly back over the top of the Audi. This is not good news for the number two crew leading the World Endurance Championship at the moment, as we get some on board with G Drive Racing's 26, and that's Gonzalez at the wheel of that car at the moment.
Well, the TV pictures have improved slightly.
No, it's not, because he's not in that car this weekend. So that was
could have
right
been
car. Rusinov, Martin and Conway I've got in that car.
It's a pretty good lineup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the Audi, the remains of the Audi are being brought back to the paddock
very slowly. Is that a Merchant Ivory screenplay, the remains of the Audi?
Ah, yeah, so he's coming up here. So
yeah, we'll
see. He's going to be brought right past our position, so
yeah,
we should get a very good look at
looking down on it. The
He hasn't got the right pass, obviously.
No.
He's not being allowed through the gate.
DSC snappers who are listening in the media centre, I'm sure, or Graham Goodwin, DSC editor, who we will have on, don't worry. I know that these early sessions are good to have the guests in. Coming in to the paddock from pit in end.
Well, it appears to have a man instead of a right rear corner.
Yeah, there is a bloke literally standing on the back of the flatbed with his little...
Well, he looks like he's inside the car.
He's inside where the car would have been had it had a right rear corner. You're absolutely right. And he is holding the strop on the end of the crane. Not as much of a strop as Audi will be having when that gets back.
So we'll see it go just behind.
I think he's going to come all the way up, Sam.
No, there's a roadway that runs just behind here, yeah.
It's annoying. Audi are at the opposite end from us.
It's really quite dangling.
Yeah, you're right. That wasn't a long enough flatbed. It's gone all the way to the fin, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole...
So that means... And there's cooling, there's radiators in there, there's turbos in the... Oh, no, turbos in the middle of the...
There's only one turbocharger, but there is the exhaust systems right there. So the exhaust system will have gone, and that will have knocked all the way down, so that could have done some pretty serious engine damage.
You've got to worry about gearbox as well. In terms of drive shafts,
I would say almost certainly the gearbox is a write off looking at that. So, gearbox, engine.
What has it hit?
I think this is one of the things we're going to have to find out after the session. We're not going to see a replay. So, that's a fantastic onboard camera, those who've got the live feed from the number 96 Aston Martin, looking back at the. And they've just switched it off, but looking back at one of the Porsches chasing him down with a Toyota coming around the outside, and now we're with that Toyota.
This is the number 8 of Sebastian Buemi, right up in behind the Felbermayr Porsche there. Guys were having lots of fun in hire cars this morning as I came in. What's the fastest car in the world?
It's a rental car.
Not yours, that's right. It's a rental, let's go mental.
Well, despite the fact that it's in pieces, the
still
number 2 car is still the fastest car out here.
And they still haven't got it into the inner sanctum of the paddock.
No, indeed, it's sitting at a rather precarious
jaunty
angle on the...
Jaunty, I think. you're listening to RadioLeMans.com. We're powered by Nissan for the Fuji 6 Hours here in the anti-penultimate round of the 2013 World Endurance Championship.
Anti-penultimate?
The one before the end. That's right, isn't it?
No.
I think it would be. Look it up. The Audi number 2 caused the red flag this morning. Loic de Waal and Christian Poulsen coming together at turn 5 in a situation we know not more details, I'm afraid, having not seen it. Saw the aftermath, which was ugly for the Audi, the championship leading Audi. Alan McNish and Tom Christensen's car in the hands of Loic de Waal has come back, but only about 75% of it.
But the 95 car, the Poulsen car, hasn't gone back out on track, so maybe the damage was more than we saw.
Well, and they have had front suspension issues, haven't they? At quarter, I think three of the Astons all had issues around the front end. There was that controversy about the Darren Turner championship leading car, as it was going into that weekend, not being allowed out by the ACO, by the FIA rather, scrutineer.
Whether a fix is good enough or not was the argument, whether the welding was up to standard. I think Aston Martin Racing and Pro Driver pretty trustworthy
still,
on those
and
ones.
I think they're still pretty sore about that. David Richards was apoplectic with rage. In comes the number 1 Audi, sitting in third position at the moment. Loic de Waal's time of 1:28.676 still stands as the top time in the session, as against a 1:28.8 from Sebastian Buemi, and that's quicker than we've seen that car go this morning. Lotterer's 1:28.9 was from the earlier part of the session, 0.281 of a second behind his colleague, whose car is still waiting to be granted entry into the inner paddock. So 2:08.1 from 7, Nicolas Lapierre at the wheel. Just another 0.4 further back, 29.1. That's pretty close for the Toyota this weekend, the Toyota Powered Rebellion. Expect to see that sadly move out. In P2, it's the 47. Now, we didn't get to talk about this as well. We were talking about new cars and new drivers. 47 is KCMG, the Morgan Nissan, with Richard Bradley, Hiroshi Koizumi, and Sugo Matsuda at the wheel. Reasonable.
This team, KCMG, we were talking about them before we came on air. We did see them at Le Mans, but what we haven't seen them is in the Asian Le Mans series, which they've absolutely dominated, won every race. They were here just a few weeks ago, won the race here, and they really should have a good setup and a good package for this track. So we'll see how well it goes. But this is a team from Hong Kong who mainly do the Asian series, but because they've dominated it, we're pretty certain to see them at Le Mans next year. So I believe they've got an automatic entry.
Yes. Yep.
Well, just a bit of an Audi update for you. The Audi mechanics has finally found their car, and
so they've gone down there now.
They sprinted down there from the back of the paddock with a cover to throw over it. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like the cover fully covers the car. Such is the level of damage at the rear end. There's quite a crowd of people now forming around the back of the Audi, which is still not being allowed into the paddock. They're quite hot on passes here.
The pass was on the bit that's left on the track.
No, there's a very slow moving car on the track.
And that's the other Audi.
And it looks like it's the other Audi.
It is the other Audi. It is absolutely the number 1 car pulling off the racing line, coming out of turn 3 into turn 4. And this has got Ben Treluway on his outlap. Ben Treluway on his outlap. It's been drama filled. And is he trailing some kind of fluid as well? He gets up to speed now as he heads up the hill.
Looking like something coming out of the back of it.
We'll see him in a moment as he turns down through
there
5.
He
and he's not up to speed. He's staying off the racing line.
Also, it's the Porsche behind him.
I wonder, by the way, looking at that shot at 5, if Loic lost it coming over the top of the brow, the car snapped sideways. The only thing that he could have hit is the barriers on the right-hand side between 4 and 5.
Well, that's all that's down there. I mean,
it's the only thing he could have hit.
He was off on the left-hand side of the track.
I think that's where he's ended up. Unless he's lost it completely and gone into the apex of the corner backwards and ripped off the rear corner.
So what did the Aston Martin have to do?
Probably hit the debris.
Yeah, I think that might be what happened. I don't think the Aston Martin was involved. We haven't seen it.
No. They are investigating an incident at the moment. Now, there is the Toyota. I'm looking to see if the Audi comes through with Ben Treluway. Alex Wirtz has just got into the 7 car. It's still Buemi in the 8. And still no one has beaten Loic de Waal's 28.8 that he put in. And the Audi has not come onto the front straight yet.
No, it's just passed us by.
Oh, it has?
Speed, yeah.
All right, so Control-Alt-Delete there, the old three-fingered salute from Ben Trelawney. And, in fact, we see onboard pictures now, clear as a date, of the number one car going down to turn number three.
Not making great inroads on that Porsche in front of him,
it's
though, John.
The Felbermayr car, the Proton car ahead of him. Now, let's have a look from the onboard. Hopefully our colleagues at TV will stay on that. Actually, if I feed them some sound, they'll be able to hear us, what we're seeing. And hopefully our colleagues from TV will... No, he's further around the lap than I thought. Is he? No, here he comes. This is through turn four, going up the into a slight depression. And then up the hill.
So I'm just baffled as to what you can hit there.
No, he's at the chicane. He's at the chicane. He is at the Dunlop chicane. Let's have another look the next time around. If we stay on board with him, maybe able to see some skid marks on the road and make some CSI Fuji type estimations of what's going on. Meantime, Toyota Racing number 8 is in the pit lane and Buemi is out.
And
Anthony Davidson has jumped into that one.
One thing I've noticed about the Toyota since we've been sitting here, they've got very, very good top straight line speed.
Mm.
They're faster than the Audis down the straight by making about 3 or 4 tenths of a second in sector one alone. Unfortunately, they're losing it all in sector two and three.
Yeah, because that's twisty and turny.
Yes.
Like a twisty turny thing.
And of course, the Audi has a blown diffuser, giving it lots and lots of lovely downforce.
Are you allowed blown diffusers in WEC?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Audi has one.
Okay. Into the pit lane comes Matthias Besch in the presumably restored to health. Maybe not, actually. Oh, no, he did his fastest middle sector. Restored to health, then we'll accept from the Lola chassis, the Rebellion Toyota team. As out goes Anthony Davidson, just pulling down on the straps before he exits the pit lane. Very long pit lane here as well, Sam, so additional pit stops during the race, not what you want.
No, I know. What a lot of the guys are going to be doing is just staying out of the pits as long as possible. And it's going to be more a case of tyre wear than fuel. So how long can you make the tyre stints last? And this track is quite harsh on the tyres, because apart from the big straight at the beginning and end of the lap, everything else is a corner. There's no real straights anywhere else on the track, apart from a short shoot from second corner to Coca-Cola, but we're really only talking a couple of hundred metres.
Just talk for a moment. I need to set something up because I think we might be able to hear something from Loic Duval in a moment, thanks to Martin Pass.
Well, we're just looking at the various cars. We've now got proper TV footage, which is great to see. The G-Drive car coming up. The LMP2 class is actually, for me, one of the most exciting classes in WEC, simply because the cars have been around for so long and they're so well established and the setups are also well known, that the class, when you see the race on Sunday, there'll just be a big bunch of cars that run round and they all pit at the same point, and it's almost like a NASCAR race when they all dive in the pits together. It's coming as a big
love
it. It's a pit stop competition.
Martin Pass has fired us a little bit of audio, which I'm going to try and, by the miracles of modern science, get to you.
Oh, it'd be incredibly rapid if he's done that. It's very impressive.
Which means Loic has got back to the pits, of course. And it's just a question of getting their file to the right part of the computer. And then we'll play that in. You're listening to RadioLeMond.com. We've got just under 44 minutes still to run in this first free practice session, which has been replete with drama for the leading championship contender from Audi.
And I don't think anybody really expected it to be all this exciting, but for a free practice session, this one's had it all. I think it might have the touch of that whenever... Oh, and a big lock-up from the... we've got the Lotus running. They're the only Judd Engines car in LMP2. Obviously, there's been that big falling out between Lotus and the company that manufacture its car, Ades.
Mm.
Ades is now going to come back with its own branded LMP2 next year, but Lotus, I assume, will also be back with their essentially identical car, running as different manufacturers against each other with the same design.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not quite sure how that fits into the rules of homologation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're re-homologating the same car, which is essentially identical. But the Lotus cars don't really have the level of technical support anymore from their manufacturer. And the team that runs the car, the Cadell Collars team, doesn't really have the in-house design capability to be able to bring that car on year. Obviously in LMP2 you're only allowed to do a big modification on the car once a season.
Yeah.
In the GTE Pro class...
Yeah, we haven't talked about GT at all. I was just starting to run down the P2 cars. It's 47 from 49. Luis Perez Compank at the wheel of the Pecom car. And then it's the 27 Zytec. And that is another new car this weekend. The Gainer International Zytec Nissan. Katsuzuki Hironaka. Masayuki Ueda. And Bjorn Wertheim.
Well,
goodness.
Gainer is a well-established race team. We saw them in Le Mans a few years back running a Domus Jim Gainer.
Yeah.
It's the same organisation, Gainer International. They race in Super GT, but the team is looking to have a full-on either Asian Le Mans series or more likely World Endurance Championship tilt with an LMP2 starting next season. I am told very reliably by people from within that team. So they are here working as other teams have this year with Greaves Motorsport to run that car. So that's actually one of the Greaves Motorsport cars, and you've got a lot of Greaves Motorsport guys down there in the pits, and you've got Ricardo Davila working with them as well, who is obviously Mr. Nissan super engineer. But they also have some of the Greaves the Gainer International engineers and drivers down there as well, so they're here to learn about World Endurance Championship and about LMP2, because they're very, very seriously contemplating racing in LMP2 for the full season next year. And they're evaluating the full range of chassis available, and there seems to be quite a lot of chassis available at the moment.
More chassis than, and certainly more engines in P1 than there are customers, potentially.
I think that's certainly the case in P1, but in P2 there seems to be an awful lot of chassis available. Not so many engines available. I mean, just looking down the entry list here at Fuji, only two cars, the pair of Lotuses, have non-Nissan engines.
Gainer nearly won the 2011 GT300 title, says Christopher Matthias. You've got a good memory.
Indeed, with an Audi R8. I have the desk calendar on my desk in Hertfordshire.
Let's get to the GTE Pro and Am category before something else happens. It's Fred Makovicki for Aston Martin in the pits at the moment in the 97 car with a 1:39.5 from a 40.9 for Jimmy Bruni in the 51 Ferrari. Ricard Leitz in the 92 Porsche, a 40.9 as well. Unbelievable how tight it is in this. Jimmy Bruni, 40.966. Leitz, 40.999. And Jimmy just shaves his time there with courtesy of a faster final sector to a 40.947 against a 40.999 from Ricard Leitz. Kimi Kobayashi with the second of the Ferraris, the 71 car, in fourth position in Pro. And the number one Audi off the road at turn three. Was that turn three, or was
that? I think that might have been. That was, I think.
No, that's the exit of seven and eight, isn't it? Because now he's coming down the hill into the Dunlop chicane again.
So he was off then in the Advan corner, which
correct.
Is where his teammate had a, well, shall we say, a moment.
Yeah.
It's not the Audis. I don't know. The Toyota owned Fuji Speedway isn't really working so well for these. Audis.
Proton Competition lead the AM with Gianluca Roda clocking a 142.5 for the 61 Ferrari. Jack Gerber's in that car now, 42.5 from that car, 42.6 from Nick Johnson in the 57 car. Or Tracy Krohn, the car owner, is in that one now.
Well, the art car's just coming into the pit lane, the Pescarolo. Oak Morgan branded Pescarolo, but the art car livery. I love the look of that thing, John.
Yeah,
I think it's absolutely brilliant to see a team with the bravery to go ahead and do something like that.
I agree. I just think that one is slightly messy.
When you see the real thing with the welded bits of metal, what they did, for those who didn't see the sort of Le Mans coverage, they took a real ex-Le Mans Pescarolo chassis and bodywork and gave it to this French artist who created a new body for the car, as we're a big rotation from one of the IMSA Performance Porsches somewhere on the track, but he'll be fine. Or has he beached it? That's not a good place to be.
That's coming out of five.
Yeah.
That is coming out of five. See, this over here, I'm pointing now, which it doesn't work. Over on the right side of the screen. Oh, no, that's turn seven. So I don't think that is turn seven. That's turn five.
I think that's turn five.
That's six. And seven's down here. That's seven.
Well, that Inter-Performance Porsche managed to get underway as one of the Aston Martins tries desperately to get some heat in his tyres. But the back to the art car, the artist got some old road signs from around the Le Mans area,
yes,
and chopped them up, welded them all together and made a metal body out of these old road signs and welded it all to the chassis. Absolutely beautiful thing to behold. And I asked the team boss at Oak Racing, who used to work for Peugeot Sport, why can you not get any sponsors? Why do this? And he said, it doesn't matter. We don't need sponsors because with this artist and this sort of car, in a few years, this car will be worth millions of pounds more than any sponsor would be able to pay us. So it's a long-term ambition that they're going to sell this car in a few years.
I like it.
Which is a really, really clever way. Just think if you'd got one of those Andy Warhol BMWs.
Which probably went for 3/5 of nothing at all.
Exactly.
Back in the day. Apart from dropping all my little leads, we are trying to get you some audio from Loic Duval as we have a yellow flag at the final corner, turn 16, Panasonic. Not sure for why at the moment. Look to the right, can't see anybody off the road. And in fact, as we're on board with the 26 of Roman Rusinov,
it was the yellow flag was for the number 61 car, which I believe is a Ferrari of some description, which had rotated. And
Jack Gerber in the AF Corsa car, and it is.
So one of the questions about the AF Corsa Ferraris,
mm-hmm,
how works are they?
It's a perennial question, isn't it? They are works blessed, aren't they?
Mm.
If Ferrari had a works team, I think it would look quite like AF Corsa.
And I think Kamui Kobayashi's paycheck is not written by AF Corsa.
Ah, no, that's different, because there's factory drivers without necessarily being in factory cars. I mean, we know Porsche do that.
Porsche do that, certainly. They do also have their factory team. However, I think most of those AF Corsa drivers in the Pro Car are on Ferrari's payroll rather than Amato Ferrari's payroll.
Yes.
Amato Ferrari being the man behind AF Corsa.
And no relation at all?
No.
Bizarrely.
He is the AF of AF Corsa. Ferrari's actually quite a common name in Italy.
Really?
Yeah. It's not that uncommon.
So what we got left? 35 minutes. And Loic Duval's time still stands, by the way. Anthony Davidson has got down to just over 0.2 away, improving Buemi's time from earlier on.
I get the distinct impression that the Toyotas are actually running a proper test program today rather than just going out to set times. Mm-hmm. I think they're really experimenting. They're coming in and out of the pits quite a lot. They're trying different things. That fast six they've got seems to have dropped off a little bit, which suggests they may have made some little aero setup changes on the car.
Hello to James Hazen. And thank you for your help earlier on with our dilemma about the swap from hot to cold on American military bases. Listening in from MCAS Yuma.
Well, you have a very, very local US base here in Gotemba. It's a famous military town.
Yeah, we were listening to AFN this morning, the Eagle A10. This morning, listening to that coming in.
Well, moving from the US military to Hong Kong based racing teams, I mentioned that they must have a pretty good setup here, and it's the KCMG car is topping out the LMP2 standings, mm-hmm, all of 0.4 of a second. I think
it's
they
so
are a
tight,
car to watch
it?
Here.
It is so tight, beautifully so.
It's just the nature of this track really rewards a setup in half the track and punishes it in the other half, and that always creates really good close racing. So the first few laps, particularly LMP2 class and both GT classes on Sunday, are going to be absolutely sensational to watch. And I think it will be quite exciting in the LMP1s as well, because if the Toyotas can keep this high top speed going on, there's an awful long way from the start of the race down to that first corner, and with the Toyotas having an advantage there, even the wee Scotsman won't be able to hold them off, I don't think.
But that bodes, I think that, you know, bodes well for the race on Sunday. We've been wanting
a bit of action at the front of the field. We got it for a while at quarter, and the Toyota, with its post Le Mans bodywork, has clearly been a very, very different animal.
It certainly is. I mean, it's clear Toyota are down on power compared to the Audi. I mean, now there's no way Toyota would be able to sacrifice things aerodynamically the way that Audi seems to be able to.
Andy Davison has got the 8 car, by the way, in the garage at the moment.
This is what I was talking about. I think they're running some sort of test program. They're experimenting. There's no great rush or panic in the garage. They just seem to be working through a program and getting the job done. In fact, Ant looks a little bit bored.
He does.
Still, I'm sure he's much rather be sat there than in front of the big TV screen in a Formula One paddock.
It's not really that big. It's only an iPod. It's only an iTouch. He's just that small. The Audi have been out testing again, though. They've been doing their Monza with no chicane thing again, haven't they? With a not necessarily a full 14 car, but certainly running on a 14 rims and rubber.
I think it's what did the team call it? The Black Beauty or something like
yes,
that.
Yes. Yeah.
What was the number 4 car at Le Mans?
At the test.
At the test, they got that car out on the little narrow tyres and some 2014 bits, and they're pounding round doing quite a bit of tyre testing. As Davidson, speaking of going out testing, Davidson goes out to have a run himself in the Toyota, but has clearly forgotten to do his seatbelts up.
Let's see if we can get this.
Well, we've got a lovely situation, I think, with these GTE Pro class.
Yeah.
Where you've got works Ferraris, or sort of works Ferraris, properly works Porsches, and properly works Aston Martins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all you need to throw into this World Endurance Championship are those two works Corvettes and the two works Dodges, and you'd have an amazing
SRT, love.
Yeah. SRT.
Well, it is, isn't it?
I know, Ralph Sheil will probably have a go at me now.
Probably, you think?
Yeah. And it would be nice if we saw some. I'm not sure if Darren Cox is listening, I'm sure he's around here somewhere. It'd be lovely if we had a couple of GTE spec Nissans, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be very nice.
Well, a big hint for him, from him yesterday, in fact, that they were very interested in the new 16 regs, where they could build a GT3 car and then effectively make that into a GTE car.
I'm very interested to see those regulations, because obviously GT3 doesn't really have any technical regulations. It just has this weird balance of performance nonsense.
Listen, I get criticised for saying that, and whilst I agree, I don't disagree at least with what you're saying, it's not nonsense. It's very, very successful, but there's no technical regulations, and you can't. That's fine for national and for gentleman races, and I understand why that works, but if you're going to have manufacturers using that as the basis of their top class GT racing, then the spending race will get out of hand, and therefore it will kill itself within a very short time.
Well, that's already started to happen with some of the Blancpain, and you look at the cost of the annual updates of the car, it's almost the cost of half the car in some manufacturers' cases. So I really think the current GT3 is on a hiding to nothing. Yes, there's a lot of cars out there, but I think they really could be, the whole class could be improved by taking on proper technical regulations. In fact, I'd take that stance with every single racing series in the world, apart from possibly NASCAR.
Okay, now, we might, with a bit of luck and a fair wind, be able to have a listen to Loic Duval, who is back in the pits, and thanks to Martin Pass of Audi for this, who grabbed him for us when he got back. Let's make sure that this goes to air. Let's have a listen to this.
Before turn 3, I catch an Aston Martin. Then for turn 4, I went on the outside. I think that I kept my line, you know. And I think that basically it just went a bit offline. And he came and touched the rear of the car. And then I just spun. And I went crashing into the tire barrier on the
high
outside.
High speed into the
Yeah, it's the high speed. So that's the thing. We don't have the video so far, so we have to check what happened exactly. But that's my point of view now. We have to see on the video.
So there we go, and thank you to Martin Pass, whose voice you heard asking the questions there, and to Eve for getting that across to us so efficiently, somewhat ironically, on a Grand Am stick, which I think is very funny. You can push that yourself, it's all right. Sam worried about turning his mic back on there. So a brush with the Aston that sent him into the right-hand wall.
So that must have been a pretty light rush.
Yeah,
because there was no real damage on that.
But also, that would have been scary because you're loading the car up so much at that point and leaning on a prototype. Wow. Into the pit lane comes the car that was leading early on, the GT category, the 88 Porsche Felbermayr Proton car, now being usurped by Stefan Mucha in the 97 Aston. 39.5 for that car, 40.7. for Richie Stanaway, 40.9 for Fisichella, 40.9 for Lieb, 41 flat for Wielander, and 41.1 for Patrick Pelé. So the sum total of just on what? Six tenths of a second. Just under. About half a second between the GTE profiled. That's nice, isn't it?
It's going to be quite exciting.
And as much as we talk about balance of performance, and I still have a fundamental issue. I think if you build a better widget, you should be allowed to race the better widget. And I understand people's pain for that. But I also understand the need for a show. I have much more issue with waivers that we don't know about than with balance of performance that we do. But you can't argue with six-tenths between the top cars in GTE, can you?
We do, of course, have balance of performance in GTE as well, but GTE, you have proper technical regulations as well.
Yeah.
You also do get a lot of waivers.
Because we can't see the waivers easily. We can ask, and some people will tell you, because the teams obviously know more about it than we do. Some people won't, but that irks me a little bit.
I think they should publicly disclose all waivers for all cars.
Yep.
And the teams know what the waivers are. For example, when we had the Corvette C6 mm-hmm. R, the GT1 specification car, not the one that we see in GTE now, mm-hmm. the previous C6R, that car had a chassis made of a different material to the street car.
Yes.
But it was essentially the same chassis as the C5.
Yes.
So it was sort of allowed because they hadn't made it up from nothing. But every single car out there is going to have some degree of waivers on it. But speaking of cars that, well, haven't been entirely successful, whilst they have performed well and won Le Mans in its class with the Porsches.
Yeah.
Porsche is now going to make that car available to customers next year, but will it be the same 991?
No, it won't be, because Manti are working on an evolution car, and because they're not going to have a separate homologation, because anybody who's eagle-eyed about looking at the street cars will have noticed that the GT3 is being launched now. It won't be available till the early part of next year, perhaps the late part of this year, but probably the early part of next year in your showrooms. The car on which, or the bodywork of that car, is the same as the Turbo S, which is the bodywork that the current iteration of 991 that the Manti Porsche A-Gear cars are running here. The rules state quite clearly that if you are going to have an evolution version of that, you have to have that one and one only within the first year of its competition. So by Bahrain, we've got to have an Evo 991 racing, not two, but one certainly, to be legal for next year. Now, whether they then sell that to customers, sell the current version to customers, what a core in the Tusk series going to get in the States as a factory team or as a factory supporter team, a factory works team they're calling themselves over there. What a Falcon going to get? Derek Walker seems to think he'll get the latest iteration. Will they? Won't they? We don't know.
And it's really fascinating. I mean, could they completely homologate a different car?
If they were going to homologate a different car, then they wouldn't have to have the Evo out by Bahrain.
Exactly.
Do you know something, Sam?
I'm hinting something.
Are you?
Yes, I don't know. I'm not the Porsche man in our office.
So do you think then that they're going to go for a completely different version of the 991?
Yes, that's exactly what I think they're going to do.
That we haven't seen yet. But based on which street car?
I don't know.
Because the issue there is that there isn't another street car that they can base the homologation on that will have had enough cars built to allow that to happen.
you can, if you are someone like Porsche and you are going to put the car into series production and it just haven't had enough out, you will get a waiver for that because it's, you're going to build enough. It's like Ferrari saying, we've got a new 458 coming out, we're going to build the race car. We've only built about 10 of them so far, but we, here's the production order book for the next, you know, 600-700 of them.
But then you're only allowed to have, I can't remember what the percentage is, of the road cars that you've actually built, you're only allowed to have a certain percentage of race cars if the homologation hasn't been met.
If you're a works car, it's interesting. I think they'll get away with that because they're Porsche.
Okay. We've got a couple of improved times, and Marcel Fesler and Anthony Davis are now faster than the luckless Loic Duval. His time of 1:28.6 was the fastest until a few moments ago. 1:28.4 from Fesler, and now a 1:28.3 from Anthony Davidson last time around. And the two Toyotas are line astern, with the number 8 of Davidson going down the inside of Wurz right into turn number 1. He got a fantastic drag down the front straight. He's got traffic ahead of him. The 8 star Ferrari and the Felbermayr 88 Porsche are in front of him, but
I think we'll see them doing that in qualifying.
Yeah, do you think they're going to do a bit of no tour, no front row kind of thing?
Exactly.
So let's see Davidson's splits. 19.8 as against Wurz's 20.2 on the first split. And that tells the story in itself, doesn't it? That was just a little bit at the front straight.
Well, we've seen a lot faster from the Toyotas, actually. Mm-hmm. Without a tow, we've seen a lot faster from the Toyotas in that first sector. So in sector two, again, I mean, the number 8 car, driven by Davidson, he's not going as fast as he's been, even with that incredible tow that he got down the start-finish straight. They're not playing games so much, but they're certainly working a program here.
Yeah, Audi much quicker in the central section. 26.4 for Fesler against the 27.2 for Davidson. Mm. Davidson did have traffic, in fairness. Alfred Wallace at Cadpig says, would Porsche be able to homologate the Cayman? Yes, of course they would, but they won't.
No, they won't. It'll be a 911.
There is a mental block at Vysak to racing anything other than what they see as their top of the range sports car, which is the 911. The Cayman, a lot of people tell you the Cayman is probably as good, if not better, and 30 odd grand cheaper, and particularly the Cayman R and the Cayman RS, which we are still hoping for.
Well, speaking of cars that we won't see a Cayman GTE, I mean that's a known factor. There's two other GTE cars out there that we probably won't ever see on the track, or we won't see them anytime soon. Toyota built themselves a GTE car.
Yeah.
And it still resides either here at Fuji or in Cologne, depends who you ask. But it was a very nice little Lexus LF LC thingy. I can never remember the Lexus names. A very nice little 4-litre engined GTE car, ready to go. It tested and they never released
the coupe.
Yeah.
Right, the 430 Lexus coupe.
No, not the SE430. No, the Lexus LFLC or something.
Oh, the
LFA. LFA.
Yeah. Did they actually build enough of them to homologate that as a GTE car?
Well,
in terms of the road going car.
I think they probably either got a waiver because they're Toyota. But you
or
know,
they did.
Or they did, and they were very gung ho about running one TSO30 and one GTE at Le Mans that first year.
That car came out of a Nürburgring project, of course, didn't it?
No.
Ah, so that was a different car from the Gazoo car.
Well, it depends again who you listen to. My understanding is that the Gazoo car, and having looked at pictures, I'm told the Gazoo car is the same as the GTE car.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at pictures, they look to me like completely separate cars.
Mm. I saw one in the carbon at Cologne.
You would have done. That's a GTE car.
Yeah, and that was at the time, I don't think it was full GTE. I think it was a bit of a halfway house, an evaluation project.
There was also
like
a GT3.
Yes. I know that.
But the fully loaded GTE car did apparently evolve into a GT. Sorry for the pause. There's a Lotus exploring the Japanese countryside.
And I think that was James Rossiter, who's just got out in the 31 car.
Wow, cold tyres and poor sat nav. Probably not in English.
Forgot to put the telephone number in to find out where he was going. Sorry, go back to Lexus.
Yeah, the Lexus car. essentially evolved into a car that raced at the Nürburgring this year, if you look at the photos rather than listen to what the people involved say.
Do Lexus still want to go sports car racing? Toyota Lexus?
Well, is Super GT still sports car racing?
Yes, but no, when I say sports car racing, I mean what we're looking at now is your sports car racing.
Well, Toyota are involved, so yes. Whether they use a Lexus brand or not, I don't...
GT86 is no good to them.
I think the GT86 is too small.
And well, you can't do anything with that engine.
Yeah.
You'd have to have a massive waiver like BMW have got.
Well, you could put an E320 in there.
Well, but you see, but can you, really?
Yeah.
Because there's still some argument about whether the BMW Z4 GTE, as it's called, is actually fully homologated by the ACO to go ACO racing.
Well, my understanding is it's not.
I'm glad you've said that.
My understanding is absolutely not, and that's why we haven't seen it in any ACO sanctioned races. Only ALMS / IMSA / TUSC / NASCAR sanctioned races.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how long that program will last for if DTM USA takes off, which I'm not sure it will.
Well, I think you'll still see the BMWs next year in the first year of TUSC.
But I think that project will end as soon as BMW get another promotional vehicle in the States,
as it were. Pun intended. A fastest first sector by Anthony Davidson, 19.5, 27.1 in the middle. He's hit some traffic. Can he improve on his 1:28.3? 16 minutes and 21 seconds left. Let's have a look at the classes. Sam Collins and John Heindorf here. Raymond Narak leads GT Am now in the 76. IMSA Performance Matmut Porsche. From Gianluca Roda now in the pit lane in the 88 Felbermayr car. And Bruno Senna on Pro-Am duty this weekend in the 95 Aston that was involved with that incident earlier on today with Loic Duval. Christian Poulsen at the wheel there. In GT Pro, it's Aston Ferrari, 97. Stefan Mucha from Pedro Lamy in the 99. Separated but all of a sudden by quite a lot of time, because a 39.5 by Mucha as against a 40.7 by Lamy. 40.9 by Fisichella in the third place Ferrari. In LMP2, it is the 47, new number, KCMG. At the moment on board that car is Taisugio Matsuda, 134.1, 134.5 for the Pecom Orica Nissan of Pierre Caffer, the 49 car. Olivier Pla, 135 dead in the 24 Morgan, and there was just a... No, that must have been a blue flag waving at the first corner for the Porsche of Mark Lieb, just going through there. And at the top, Anthony Davidson with a 28.3, 28.4 for Marcel Fesler, 28.6 for the stationary Audi number 2, now being, I'm sure, pulled apart. And
I think that was already done.
Well, all right. What was left of the right rear corner being taken apart with a little more care than Loic Duval wiping it off. That's the big story from this part of the session, no doubt. So, disaster for the championship leaders. Alex Wurz in fourth position with a 28.9. As we've had Bruno Senna having a spin, not Senna having a sin. Although the team might see it that way.
If you don't spin in practice, you're not trying.
Thank you, Gilles Villeneuve.
I didn't mention the second missing GTE car.
Go back to that now.
That's the orange corner, McLaren.
Yeah, the P1.
No, the M5412C GTE, which was built and does exist, I'm told.
And they lobbied for a long time to have carbon fibre monocoque cars allowed in GTE. That rule change happened very quietly, but it happened. There wasn't a big fanfare about it. But that and the NSX would benefit from that. And as yet, we've seen neither of those cars. The NSX needs a further rule change because that's likely to be a hybrid. And at the moment, hybrid systems aren't allowed in GTE. At the moment, I think that may change.
I think it will change if Honda want it to.
You see, I think that's two cars, and I think if the other manufacturers don't want it, then it will be kept out.
I'd be astonished if the other manufacturers didn't want it, to be honest.
Really?
Because they've got to, well, ignoring the German government sort of running away from its environmental sort of responsibilities, the rest of Europe has to have cars that produce a certain amount of CO2 per kilometre,
right.
And the target's really hard to achieve, which means a lot of these manufacturers are going to have to be very fuel efficient or pretty much only produce hybrids to mm-hmm. achieve it, which means the streetcar will be a hybrid, which means the race car needs to be a hybrid as well.
Not convinced. I think the ACO would rather have a manufacturer like Honda with hybrid in F1. In P1, sorry.
I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see that as well. Well, Honda LMP1 makes an awful lot of sense, and particularly as they've got that rather nice new facility in Milton Keynes to produce things.
Yes. Now, Dirty Uncle Kevin has sent me a homologation form for LMGTEs, which Scott Elkins, apparently of Tusk, American Le Mans Series IMSA at the moment, Tusk next year, has posted in response to the question about the BMW, but nowhere on there can I see the words BMW or
Z4.
But both Sam and I are...
Oh no, BMW Z4 GTE.
Yeah, that could have been cut and pasted on the top of there, couldn't it? Okay, well, that's not the information that I've been given by other manufacturers in GTE who have protested loudly.
Yes.
And to a man about not the waiver given for the engine, because they understand that it's got to run the V8, can't run the straight six. Not the fact that it's lengthened the wheelbase and widened the track, because they understand about that as well. But the excess of the bodywork and wheel arch extensions.
Yeah, I mean,
that is what has caused the issues. That's what I've been told by the other manufacturers.
I think that's exactly right. And I think BMW really aren't playing in the spirit of the regulations. It's not just a waiver, it's a waiver mobile.
Mm.
The car, it's a £20,000-£30,000, I don't know how much they cost, street car with a 2-litre engine, maybe a 2.5, maybe a 3 if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the same league as the base models of the cars that are in the GTE class. So to make a car like that compete with this sort of car, you need to spend an awful lot of money and not have any proper regulations.
How it was explained to me from the other manufacturers, and one of which was particularly vocal, was, listen, if we're going to have cars that don't look like the street cars, then there's no point in having GTE as a category.
Mm.
We want to race things that look like harder, sexier, you know, being in the gym and on steroids version of our street cars. Yes, but what we don't want is effectively, and it was described to me, as a GT500 version of our street cars. That's not what we want. That's not what GTE should be. And the wheel arch extensions and the bodywork on that car, too extreme and way beyond the regulations, and given everything else that the car was given, no need for it.
No, I agree. I just don't think that car really fits in, and I think whether it's got homologation or not, it's fairly irrelevant. I think that's one of the reasons we haven't seen it turn up in this series at all, is that everybody else would have a stink and might threaten to take their toys away and go off.
Which takes me back to that same thing about the Honda NSX and the hybrid system there. There are a long-established group of manufacturers who have supported GTE through thick and thin, who, you know, and here's this is a similar question, a similar answer rather, to questions about will teams from Tusk get invitations to Le Mans 24? And hopefully not at the expense of teams who have supported ACO regulations racing and ACO series in other parts of the world. Because you can't, if you take in two BMWs at Le Mans, who are you going to throw out? You're going to throw out two cars, who are going to have supported ACO regs all the way through the year?
I think Le Mans shouldn't be about who supported it. I think it should be about the quality of entry. And if they're two works BMWs, then they should be there. But if they are there, they should be fully compliant with not only the wording but the spirit of the regulations, and those BMWs most certainly are not.
I have to say I disagree with you. I think if you've been racing in an ACO competition all year, that should stand for something, and that should put you further up the list than somebody who just wants to cherry pick the world's greatest motor race. If, to be honest, and I've said this on tweet, so this is nothing new, I think it becomes more and more difficult for the ACO to justify inviting SRT and Viper and Corvette
as long as they stay away in any way, shape or form from WEC, ELMS or Asian Le Mans Series.
But their market, John, I mean, the Viper is pretty hard to get hold of anywhere outside of the States, and that's their market. So they've got a race in the Premier American Series, and I think that's absolutely right that they're doing that. Same deal for Corvettes. Yeah, you can buy Corvettes rather easier in Europe, but they're massively overpriced when you come here, where in the States is actually quite a good, affordable car. That's their core market, and they are racing in their core markets, and I can't criticise them for that, which is why I think it's important that cars like that are invited from Tusk, or whatever it'll be called next week.
It is called... next week, yes.
Yeah. To the take part in the Le Mans 24 Hours. But I also think we do still have this nonsense when we have these double-headed races, where you have a European Championship race at Silverstone the day before the World Championship race, where the grid's big enough for both to race together by the same rule book. And the same in America, when we've got this silly situation where you've got the works Corvettes and the works SRTs.
Yeah, but they're not
SRTs.
Racing to the same rule book.
Well, the SRTs and the Corvettes could... happily.
And next year it'll be even further away from the ACO rulebook, and also the regulations are different, and the pit stops are different, and the regulations for P2 drivers are different, and.
I think if all everybody starts behaving like grown-ups and sits around the table together...
Oh, come on, Sam, you're talking about two competing motor racing dynasties in the ACO and the France family for next year.
Are they competing, though? I don't think they're in competition. The France family.
What is the biggest motor race in the world?
What, this Monaco Grand Prix, isn't
it? Yeah, obviously. The Le Mans 24-hour race, all right? The Le Mans 24 hours. The part of that that's important is 24 hours, right? What is the France family's biggest sports car race?
The Daytona 24 hours.
Right? I'm sorry, it's oil and water, mate. It'll never work.
I think the two can sit together quite comfortably. I'm quite a fan of the France family, if listeners haven't picked that one up already.
All the dealings that we've had with the France family, directly and indirectly here at Radio Show Limited, we've had nothing but respect and honourable dealings with them. And I think the way that they've developed their product over the years, and in fact the way that they are developing Tusk for next year, if Bernie Eccleston was to develop a sports car series, what model would he run it on? He would run it on a Formula One style model, because that's what he knows and that's what he's been successful at. So the US sports car model will move towards the NASCAR model of promotion, marketing, and of logistics and how it's run, because that's what they do. And guys in the States, you're going to have to accept that if you want to go and watch sports car racing for the next few years at least, that's how it's going to be. Support it, don't support it, but don't whinge about it. That's how it's going to be, because that's how they do it. And I don't have an issue with that. What I am saying is they are diverging from ACO rules and regulations, from sporting regs as well as technical regs. I don't think that's wrong. I don't think they should have P2. I don't think they should ever bother of taking P2, because I think it's too much of a difficulty to BOP the cars. I think they need to rebuild the American market with the constituency that is there. And then, hey, we've had an IMSA class at Le Mans before in the past. I'm old enough to remember that.
We had a NASCAR class at Le Mans.
And, you know, let's rebuild what the American Le Mans Series and Grand Am were in their glory days, which, let's be honest, neither of them have had for 5 or 6 years now.
Well, I think we really should have a catch-all class at Le Mans. And I think the regulations at the Le Mans 24 Hours should perhaps be loosened up a little bit. So, yes, you have your LMP1. LMP1 is LMP1. But I think LMP2 should be allowed to open up a little bit. If you can make these... and I don't know how they're going to do it, make the Daytona prototypes and P2s work together, which
well,
I can't
not.
Really see the way it's going to work.
It's going to be fun watching.
But what else is exactly LMP2 pace?
GT500.
Exactly. Now, if the GT500 teams... Now, this is one of the things that's been announced already, is that the champion, the GT500 champion this season... will get a Le Mans auto invite.
Yeah.
But they can't use their GT500 car.
Correct.
In the same way, which strikes me as massively ridiculous.
Well, it's the same way as GTC in ELMS and Prototype Challenge in ELMS get an invitation, but they can't use their cars as well. Interestingly, nothing mentioned about what Tusk champions or race winners might get invitations to Le Mans next year. And that, again, I think, speaks to what I was talking about, the divergence of... the rules and regulations. And to be honest, if you run a P2 car in Tusk next year, if you want a GTE car in Tusk next year, you will not be competitive against full-time ACO running cars when you go to Le Mans. You're at a massive disadvantage, first of all, for you're running Continental tyres in a spec series in the States. Now, that's nothing at all against Continental tyres, and their tyres have been shown to be very good. But it will be different, Robert, than when you come to run Le Mans, bring Continental tyres and run them. You won't be successful with them.
No.
In GTE, you're going to be running a different balance of performance. You will be running different restrictors or some kind of different, because you can't be going as quick as GTE cars are here, because for a simple reason is you'd be going quicker than the DPs, or as quick as the DPs. So whatever anybody says about all the classes remaining the same, none of the classes will be remaining the same in Tusk next year, because they have to be balanced on one on a sliding scale down from DP.
And this is what I mean about everybody sitting down together. This needs to happen, is that if you look at the way the Asian Le Mans series did it, they realised if they came to Japan, everybody would ignore them unless the GT300 cars were involved.
Mm.
So they made it a GT300 championship round. And yeah. At Fuji Speedway about 3-4 weeks ago, the GT300 cars and the Asian Le Mans cars, which GT3, GTE and GT300, all had a massive shootout. And unsurprisingly, the GT300 cars kind of cleaned up and walked away with it, but only because they're works, full works cars. So it was won by the works Honda CRZ, which would be an absolutely superb car to see racing in this championship, in this race, this weekend.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I think that's exactly what needs to happen at Le Mans and other big races, and even in the World Endurance Championship.
Let's quickly run down some times with a minute to go. Stefan Sarrazin has jumped in the number 8 car, which has just been pinged for pit lane speeding. As I think I saw the number, well, I thought it said 45. Oh, it was the 45 Oak racing car, thank you. So Sarrazin from Fesler by a tenth of a second better time then from Marcel Fesler has closed in on the number 8 Toyota. The 128.3 I think was done by Anthony Davidson earlier on. So 8-1 and 2, Loic Duval's 128.5 still on the board in third place, but the car being taken apart and put back together again in the garage. If you're just joining us, and I appreciate it's early back in the UK and very late on the east coast of America, contact, light contact it would seem, with the 95 Christian Poulsen driven Aston Martin when Loic Duval was in the car, sent that car spearing into the barriers and ripped the rear corner asunder, right rear gone. The checkered flag is out. Kaz Nakajima is in the 7 Toyota in 4th position. Andrea Bellici will finish the second session rather in 5th place in the 12 Rebellion Lola. In P2 currently 26 G-Drive Orica John Martin ahead of the KCM G47 car by something like 3/10 of a second. Pierre Kaffer will come to the line in the 49 Pecom car, 34.5 for him. So getting on for a second, actually 9/10 away from John Martin's time, or at least from the 26 car's time. I'm just trying to remember who put that car up there. I think it was, that might be Mike's time actually. In fourth place, James Walker's had some time at the wheel of the 25, the Delta ADR Oregon Nissan. In pro, Darren Turner's just taken the checking flag in the leading Aston Martin. The 97 is clocked at 1:39.5 against a 40.3 of Patrick Pelé in the 91 Porsche, who nips ahead of the 99 Pedro Lamy driven Aston Martin on a 40.7, 40.9 for Mark Lieb in the second of the Porsches. Aston Porsche, first of the Ferraris with a 40.9 for Fizzy. It was Jimmy Bruni that did that time. And Tony Wielander, not very often I say this, Tony Wielander last in the class. That is quite remarkable. And in AM, we've got Raymond Narak in the 76 Porsche, the IMSA Matmut car ahead of Bruno Senna, who's had a spin or two. That car's had its trials and tribulations, as well as running into the, or having contact with, shall we say, let's not apportion blame at the moment, kind of, the 95 car in second, coming into contact with the 2 Audi. And Christian Reid has finished the session for the 88 Porsche in third position. Let me just have a quick look. 8 and 45 for speeding in pit lane. I also saw somebody earlier on getting pinged for a white line infringement and being told to go and stand on the naughty step for a while, but I'm sorry, I can't remember who that was now.
I don't know if it was actually decided they did it or not. They were just summoned to see the headmaster.
What's very good about Eduardo Freitas as our race director is he sets his stall out very, very early in the weekend. All of these people will be pinged. It's unlikely that they will get any time penalties or times disallowed because it's a free practice session. They will be fined. I have no idea what happens with the fines, but they will be fined. We'll get a
Christmas party.
See, I said that and was told off for saying that. I don't think it is at all.
It goes into the FIA Development Fund, which is the Facilities Development Fund.
There you go.
And all of that, which is the real. That's a very boring truth, but it all goes into developing motorsport around the world.
And we will get a list of those, and sometimes you know multiple transgressions can cost tens of thousands of euros. But as the weekend goes on, what you'll find is that people stop doing the naughty things, and when it gets round to race time, you know, racing drivers in some ways, Johnny O'Connell always says to me and Brian Till when we're working with him, you know, treat him like a sixth or a seventh grader and everything will be fine. Set your boundaries early, tell him what he's got to do, tell him where he's got to be, tell him which shirt to wear. Well, you know, with due respect, you know, if you let people take a lend early on, they will continue to do it. And Eduardo Freitas comes down on people early, the boundaries are set, everyone knows where they stand, so you don't go into a race and somebody puts four wheels off at corner number whatever, 16 here would be a perfect example, and then get pinged for it for the first time. It would happen earlier on in the weekend, and I'm actually absolutely for that.
I think so too. I mean, that's why they call it practice, isn't it?
Yes, free practice, absolutely. Sam Collins has been with me for this hour and a half. Drama for the Audi and a lot of work for Joost Audi in this, well, for the rest of today. I'm not sure if we'll see that car in the next session.
Well, I'm going to go and have a look.
Right, okay. What stood out from you? The Toyotas, you noticed, were quicker down the straight.
Yeah, they were significantly quicker, and that will really set them up well for the race. They'll be able to pass and pass early and maybe keep that little Scotsman behind them for a little bit longer than they expected. Because Alan McNish will clearly start the race, because he always does. The closeness of the LMP2 field is exactly as I thought. KCMG, there for me, the car to watch. They have got a good setup. The car is working well. And so I think you could see a different winner for that class to other WEC races. And, well, the GT class is just going to be one big touring car race, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, with very, very pretty and aspirational cars. Mark Lee, by the way, got in ahead of Fisichella on the very last lap of that session. And when you look at particularly the GT Pro cars, 39.5 by the lead Aston Martin. Just take that one out for a moment, because that's a bit of an anomaly. With Pele, Lamy, Lieb, Fisichella and Wielander, first of all, mouth-watering array of driving talent. And the cars on a 40.3, a 40.7, a 40.923, a 40.947. And Lieb, remember, was on a 999 before that, so he's literally just found a couple of, you know, hundredths of a second and gone between them. That is a class that needs more entries, yes, but the quality of what's there, Sam, is just outstanding.
That class, the GTE Pro class, as I was saying earlier, that for me is just absolutely mouthwatering to watch. I've just been distracted by the marshals here, who use very seasonal broomsticks.
Yep, they are
to clear the track.
They are proper witches' broom type things.
When they finish, they will just put them between their legs and fly off.
Yeah. You watch too much Harry Potter, don't you? So no great worries there, as I say, for those guys. The 95 car did get out after its little whoopsie earlier on. In P2, great run out for KCMG, mixing it with these guys in the WEC for the first time and proving that their form in a slightly less competitive, he says diplomatically, Asian Le Mans Series field is not a flash in the pan.
No, I mean, that really does show that this team has got some proper quality behind it. And well, it does, but it also probably helps them massively that they had a 3-hour race on this very circuit just a few weeks ago and have their setup absolutely honed.
Nailed on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another hour and a half to come at 7 o'clock UK time. Join us for that, Sam. Thank you very much indeed. Sam Collins of Race Car Engineering will be back with us then, either here in the booth or down in the Powered by Nissan pit lane. We've also got DSC editor Graham Goodwin and his he's been hunting around some stories for us as well. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. No time to explain. The Llama's off looking at mountains.
Nissan, the power behind the FIA World Endurance Championship on RadioLeMans.com. Nissan, we know sports cars. This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, go to www.radiolemans.com. Radio Show Limited. We talk to the world.